Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Do you remember when we did a bunch of jokes about Mitt Romney having the dog on his roof? And it was like, let's make sure people remember that Mitt Romney put a dog on his roof. You know, sometimes politics, here's the thing, Audie, sometimes politics is about big ideas, all right? And important policies.
And sometimes.
But sometimes you got to make sure voters know that Mitt Romney put his dog on his f***ing roof.
The generation of politicos that came up in the era of Barack Obama are in a way defined by their optimism. Jon Favreau, John Lovett, and Tommy Vietor, all former staffers in the Obama White House, are a textbook example. They're former speechwriters, consultants, advisors who got into podcasting and more with the company they founded, Crooked Media, which is best known for its mix of humor and advocacy rooted in Democratic Party politics. So they're here in Washington for what is commonly described as the Nerd Prom, aka the White House Correspondents' Dinner. We asked them to come visit us to talk about the role of partisan media, how the Democratic Party is changing, and what they have learned from their experiences with both. I'm Audie Cornish. This is The Assignment. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Great to be here.
How do you describe yourselves at this point?
Oh, I try not to.
Podcasters?
Podcast darlings.
I say that we run a progressive media company.
Yeah, that's
right. Usually what I say.
Oh, progressive. Interesting.
Yeah.
Did you decide at some point? It's progressive. It's not left. It's not just sort of...
How did we land on progressive?
I'm saying that because I am one of those people who did not see Barack Obama as progressive.
Mm-hmm.
I understand why people may have said that, but even at the time, I thought, like, he's kind of moderate, and that I understand why some people might be like, oh my God, this is so wild. Like, he's a black Democrat. But, like, as black Democrats go, I did not consider him the wildest one I had ever covered.
I think that's fair.
So I'm curious about how you guys, kind of coming out of that period, decided, actually, you know, here's where we're going to root ourselves on the spectrum.
We should have called it a neo-lib media company.
Neo-lib show media company. Yeah, well, here's, for me, I remember when the term progressive started replacing liberal, not because of any ideological difference between liberal and progressive, but more because conservatives had spent 40 years turning the word liberal into a bad word.
Yeah.
And so then a lot of people said, oh, I'm not a liberal, I'm a progressive. In terms of what Crooked is, we always felt like the goal was to build a space that was big enough where basically anyone who believes in democracy and believes in, like, liberal governance and believes in having an open and honest debate, who doesn't believe in killing your vice president to stay in power, would feel welcome.
Appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah. Just as a hypothetical.
Well, we put in the intro that there was humor here, so I'm
there
glad that we've gotten to it.
And so let's just
can drink now. Yeah.
Make sure we know that there was humor here.
I also have to remember for you to occasionally say your last name so people know which John it is.
Mm.
Because, sorry, not all super fans will be listening to this pod.
No, it happens a lot.
Well, does it really?
Yeah. Well, now that I live in Los Angeles, and so does he, it's even more so.
No.
Yeah.
Well,
the other thing, too, is so that's, I'm John Lovett, that's Jon Favreau. That's Jon Favreau, not the director of Iron Man, and I'm John Lovett, not John Lovitz, the SNL comedian.
I do think of you guys fundamentally as people who are very knowledgeable also about message and who even got into the idea of creating your own partisan media because of your concerns about message, right? Like the conservative messaging machine, so to speak. So when you first got into it, what did you think Crooked Media was going to be doing?
We thought we were going to do Pod Save America, which is our sort of flagship podcast.
But this is like pre-Trump, right? I mean, when you start podcasting...
Oh, when we started...
Yeah, when you first decide, listen, we're that's enough of this White House stuff, this Democratic Party stuff.
Yeah.
Media will be a good idea. What did you think would be the value of that?
So there's a huge right-wing media machine, right? We did not think that there was a lot of progressive media. We also,
though there had been attempts. Your Era Americas and obviously very long-running Democracy Now!, that show.
Right. I also think that like MSNBC obviously has a lot of liberal progressive hosts, but their job is not to inspire people to get involved and active in politics. And because we all have backgrounds and campaigns, we thought, why not have a media company that also allows us to be more explicit in telling people, here's how you can get involved, and here's how you can donate to a candidate, and here's how you can actually make a difference in your community, and helping build a space for especially people who are either longtime progressives or maybe people who are moderate or even people who are Republicans, but then Trump won and were scared and didn't know what to do, but wanted to help. And we figured we'd create the space that people could come together and figure it out.
Is that how it turned out?
Well, it's a work in progress, I'd say.
Like, what did you learn about the reality of running a media company and the limits of its reach, power, et cetera?
So I would start by saying we started a podcast before we ever thought about starting a media company. And we started a podcast in part because we were frustrated just as news consumers, right? That like there was a conversation we were having around politics amongst each other that we didn't feel like we heard out in the world, that was explicit about its point of view, that was direct about the problems but not self-serious, that that recognized that basically when the stakes feel total, when it can be exhausting and frustrating and enraging, and when there's a lot of noise, like there needs to be a space where people can come together and commiserate, but not in a way that redounds to cynicism and doing the kind of LOL nothing matters, but actually saying, all right, what is the way to be hopeful, not in a false way, not in a misleading way, but in a way that reflects our actual agency, our ability to make a difference, and how can we get more people to see that they have agency too?
And
that
and it's you're doing it in a way people are already saying the media is liberal, right? Like that conversation never changes, but you call it crooked media and it's supposed to be advocacy. And I guess I wanted to know how you felt like the mainstream media wasn't serving the people you want to serve. And I ask this knowing you're sitting in the belly of the beast. Like, we won't have you escorted out.
Yeah.
I might anyway, just to flex, but like, what, you know,
well,
like
look,
there are ways you must have felt this doesn't work for us, especially coming out of the Obama years.
Yeah. Look, I think that the media's job, I think some Democrats, some liberals believe that it's the media's job to like save democracy and to like be on our side.
Yeah, which we tell them that.
Right.
I mean, let's be honest, it's like they're part of our branding. Right. We're like, don't hate journalists.
Right.
We are part of democracy.
But I really don't think that is the media's job, right? And but I do think that in this information environment where the media is so fractured, where people are getting their information from so many different sources, there does need to be a space outside of the campaign world and government where progressives can organize and talk to each other about how to make progress. And I think that you don't have that space in the media right now. And so even if you have journalists who are doing a wonderful job, even if you have like liberal pundits on television who are brilliant, they're still not doing the hard work of organizing that's required.
Or I think of the like Stephen Colbert's and Jon Stewart's and even the genre of what I would call political news desk journalism, right? Mm-hmm. Where somebody sits behind the desk and is like speaking truth to power with sass, and like a lot of liberals enjoy that as entertainment. Mm-hmm. But you're saying even that is not,
because it doesn't, the step that it's missing is here's all the bad stuff we're going to tell you about, and then sometimes we're going to joke about it too, but also here's what you can do to change it. And by the way, you have a responsibility and an obligation to change it.
Yeah.
And that's what we've tried to do. I mean, we, you know, the thing we're, I think, most proud of at Crooked Media is Vote Save America, which is sort of our like political organizing arm in the 2020 election. You know, we got like 500,000 volunteers to sign up.
But responsibility and like that's the less sexy part.
It is. So I got to have the humor in there, too.
Yeah. And look, I think also, one thing that I feel really proud of about what we do at Pod Save America, what we do at Crooked Media, what we do at Vote Save America, what we tried to do in the book, Democracy or Else, available
How to Save America in 10 Easy Steps.
Boom, plug.
we finish each other's sentences. That's an important thing.
Man, we have been talking to each other on microphones for a long time.
Yeah, but
longer
I hear
than
that.
We've been talking to each other in person.
Yeah,
I hear that.
But it is, I think, being cynical and funny is great. being optimistic and earnest is great. It is actually really hard to try to find humor while also being hopeful. And that is a really small target that we're, that I feel, honestly, sometimes the most proud I feel is when we're able to do that and give people something that's genuinely funny, but not feeding cynicism, because there's plenty of that.
When did you realize that it was going to be harder than you thought?
Well, we had an advantage when we started Crooked Media, which is that we knew so little about what it would take to start a company that we were freed from some of the anxieties we probably should have had, because we had no idea what we had no idea about. And we really just basically had this feeling that there was an audience out there for a show like Pod Save America because of the experience we had making a show for The Ringer and because of our experience after Donald Trump won, of so many people reaching out to us and being like, what do I do? What do I do? How do I help? I feel like I don't know what to do. And we didn't have the answer, but we thought, hey, what if we create a place where we figure out the answer together? And that was really what we had, this idea that there was going to be a group of people who were trying to figure out how to move through a world in which they were caught off guard by what America could do, or they felt as though they didn't understand what was happening in politics in a fundamental way. And everything after that has been a learning experience.
You guys just articulated something that's really interesting, which is you knew what you didn't want to be. Right? You had this sense that it wasn't going to be some sort of pseudo-mainstream newsroom. You knew it was going to have a call to action, et cetera, right? Like do the work of advocacy and, I assume, fundraising?
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm reading about this infusion, this investment from George Soros. So mm-hmm. I want to make sure I have the language correct here. So Variety reporting in 2022 that George Soros made an investment in Crooked Media. He's also investing in Odyssey, which is a radio and podcasting company, et cetera. Now, I know you are already calling yourselves Crooked Media going into this, but I can't think of a bigger boogeyman on the right than George Soros. Mm. So what were those conversations like amongst just yourselves, not with him, but of like, what are we doing here?
It was fascinating because we had, long before we even started Crooked Media, the three of us and Dan Pfeiffer had been like banging the drum on why are all the wealthy donors in the Democratic Party only funding campaigns and not trying to build a progressive media infrastructure. And for years, people tried to find people who would do that, and it just people were more interested in paying for a bunch of ads last minute in a campaign.
Well, they and also rightly understood that it's hard.
It's very hard.
And that there's no money in media. So I can speak from that experience.
Right. And then the Soros folks, and it is their sort of, it's not the foundation, it's the other side. It's the private equity side. They made an investment in the Latino Media Network, which is a series of radio stations. And then we had this conversation with them, and they're like, and we told them what we were trying to do. And they're like, we believe in this. And we don't just believe in it because it aligns with our mission. We believe in the actual business itself too, because we're not going to invest in something that loses money. We're not in the business to do that, even though we believe in your progressive values and share them. So, you know, we'd like to make an investment, and we'll help you guys grow.
Yeah, I think one of the things we said from the very beginning is we want to do this. We want to build a progressive media company that has an impact, that makes an impact in politics, that helps organize and engage people, that serves as an on-ramp for people who maybe haven't been paying attention to politics, serves as a place for the hyper-engaged, progressive young person to figure out in a very noisy world what the most effective way for them to be involved could be. But we also want to prove that you can build a sustainable, growing business, that we can build something that upholds our values, both in terms of what we put out into the world, but in terms of how we build a company.
From the outside, it reflects a sense that you have your eyes wide open about what it means to be partisan media.
Mm. Well, we're sort of lucky in that regard because we can't really hide, even if we wanted to. We're former Obama staffers who started a company called Crooked Media. And so we have always believed that we can be honest with our audience about who we are, what we believe politically, and still give them good information, truthful information. And, you know, if we make mistakes, we'll correct the mistakes. And we're not trying to you know, spin out a bunch of propaganda that's false. You know who we are. You know where we stand on the political spectrum. And we're trying to give people good information despite that.
And by the way, that includes plenty of times where we're like pretty tough on Democrats because we just don't agree with what they're doing. And we think it's important that we're going to be trustworthy to our audience, even when it comes to being critical of our own side.
Yeah. And we also want to be a place like not all the hosts of all of our podcasts. We don't all have the same politics. And when we started Crooked, we said we wanted to be a place for the debate about what small L liberalism, small D democracy should be that extends from the far left to the center, or to basically this big anti-Trump coalition, for lack of a better phrase, that has formed since 2016 that includes everyone from, you know, AOC to Liz Cheney.
I'm here with Jon Favreau and John Lovett of Crooked Media. We'll be back in a moment.
This podcast is supported by Sleep Number. Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores? Sleep Number does that. Only Sleep Number smart beds let you each choose your ideal comfort and support, your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number smart beds learn how you sleep and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. Temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Apollo, the god of music, was also the god of medicine, right? So there's been a long time link between music and sound and health.
That is my favorite fact of the month. That Apollo, the god of music, was also the god of medicine. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Let's explore the world we're living in every weekday with On Point from WBUR, Boston's NPR. Find and follow On Point wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. My guests are Jon Favreau and John Lovett. They're former staffers in the Obama White House, speechwriters. They're also the founders of Crooked Media. I want to talk to you guys now about message, because that seems to be a very angsty conversation amongst Democrats right now on almost every level. So just to give an example, Biden. What should the Biden White House be saying? What should they be talking about? They're doing this wrong. They're doing that wrong. Gaza. The war in Israel. How should Democrats be talking about this?
So can I, it's fine. I want to go back to what you were talking about earlier about the media being criticized for being liberal. I do think the reason we end up being in cycles of this debate, it's not that the press treats Biden better and treats Republicans worse. So that does, I think, happen from time to time. It's that mainstream journalism treats Democrats as the protagonists and treats Republicans as the antagonists. So it is much more comfortable for there to be a debate about what Democrats can do, Democratic agency, Democratic mistakes, how Democrats need to come together to defeat Republicans, than there is to be a similar conversation looking in a very close way at how Donald Trump is messaging.
And
right?
You think that's the way it is, regardless of who's in the White House?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. And I think that reflects certain advantages that Democrats have that Republicans bang the drum about in terms of what the mainstream press covers. But I also do think this is one way in which the mainstream press creates a liability for Democrats, because it is so often that institutions, especially these are reporters that live in cosmopolitan places, that live in major cities, that come from maybe liberal colleges and institutions, they view Democrats as people making decisions, using rationality that they feel they can influence, versus Republicans, who are a kind of an antagonistic entity they don't understand as well, they can't penetrate, and they don't expect much of. And so I think that is part of why you end up with endless news cycles about what can Biden do better, what could Biden do differently, is Biden making a mistake, what's his message, what's this, what's that, because there is a focus on Democrats that is different than what we do about Republicans.
Interesting.
I also think it's heightened in this era. Like, people are very scared of what might happen if Donald Trump wins the presidency again. And I think that's Democrats, liberals, a lot of Republicans, independents, I think some journalists probably too, even if that's not their job to say it.
They feel assured by Joe Biden. And by extension, it appears Kamala Harris. There's not a talk even amongst Democrats that feels confident about what they have to offer.
But I do think it comes from just this, everyone is operating from this place of fear. And it's not a game, right? Like, when the possibility of a second Trump term is out there, everyone who's in this business, whether you're on the politics side, the media side, you're going to start saying, well, he could do this better because he's got to win. He's got to win. And so I think if it wasn't Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, I think if it was many other Democrats, there would be different kinds of criticisms of those Democrats in the White House. But there would be criticisms because it would still be close. Donald Trump lost the last election by 40,000 votes across three states.
But also something you mentioned in one of the podcast episodes, I wasn't sure which one, but you talked about the idea that there are people who felt like Joe Biden's pitch of being a kind of bridge out of the Donald Trump era was implicitly sort of, they took away the message that maybe he was one term, that he was supposed to, quote unquote, get us out. And then all the new great stuff was going to happen. And for him to be like, actually, no, I'm the great stuff. I'm doing great and I'm sticking with it. That there are some people who are disappointed by that.
Yeah. And I get that. And it's like, I went through that and then I thought, you know what? He's Joe Biden. He's the president of the United States. He gets to make the decision. He has made the bet. And I think
that's your inner staffer talking.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm saying.
Right. Like, and then you came out and said, well, the boss wants this.
Not even that. It's like, I think he genuinely believes, as he looked around the field and he looked at everyone else, that he is the best positioned person to beat Donald Trump.
And is the only person who has.
And is the only person who has, right?
Yeah.
He may be wrong, but that is his decision to make. And so now that he's made that decision, the rest of us who don't want to see Donald Trump become president again, if we don't want that future, we should do everything we can to make sure that he's successful.
Hold on, John Lovett, I see you thinking.
Yeah, my eyes do that. No, I agree with that. Look, Joe Biden's biggest liability is his age. And it is a liability that can't be surmounted with words and it won't change, right? There's no policy shift that he can do. There's no message he can do. He's older. And it concerned a lot of people that pay very close attention. I think he did a lot to mitigate those concerns at the State of the Union. And I think the more he's out there being engaged and active and actually kind of in some ways benefiting from the Republican caricature.
I hear your staffer talking.
Well, sometimes I am, but...
Well, no, but I'm looking at two people who... I mean, when did you meet Obama? 21, 22? Like, you guys were 22. Young.
Yeah.
And I remember being a young reporter at that time. And what you felt was a generational shift. There is about to be a change. Mm. And I know for a lot of Black voters, and I was covering the South, they were shocked. And their tone was kind of like, okay, if these white people are going to do this, great. Thanks, Iowa. Like, we'll get on board.
Yeah.
And... to be here in this place where the choices feel not at all like that generational shift, there is a palpable sense of disappointment among some voters. And tell me I'm wrong.
No,
but, doing.
But we're. This
you
is,
don't have to. Yeah.
So
polls,
I'm not,
focus groups.
I'm not judging you guys for having an answer,
but
giving me the answer that the White House often gives. Mm. And I'm kind of curious as people who actually. You should feel that disappointment more than anyone, right? Like, you were there for the moment it felt like things were about to be different.
Here's how I feel about this, which is, honestly, me as a person, for me, inspiration has never been what drove me in politics. It's been rage, mostly. That's just how I am. I am a negative partisan person. There's value to inspiration. There really is. There's value to having an inspirational figure, a once-in-a-generational figure like Barack Obama. He brought a ton of people together, and that helped build a coalition that delivered two big victories and all the policy victories that followed his ability to govern while he was president. What is the value of inspiration? If it's for you, if you're saying, I need to be inspired, you should ask yourself why, right? Because the goal, the value of inspiration, the value of feeling like you're pushing yourself out of bed because you can't believe how excited you are to get to vote for something, that's a nice thing. But your vote counts the same. If you understand the stakes around abortion, if you understand the stakes around the difference between a president who will cancel student debt and try to pass a child tax credit versus Trump's promise to cut corporate taxes, someone who's going to believe in democracy and someone who's not, if you understand the stakes, it doesn't matter whether you're inspired or not. I wish that politics always felt like the most exciting thing. This election, for a lot of people, doesn't. You're calling it our staffer vibe. I think that one of the things that led us to start this company is we kind of have a belief that there are plenty of people commiserating and cynical and annoyed by what politics isn't. And we want to be a place where we say, all right, this is the world. And we're going to do the best we can in the world that we've had. And there's a lot of reason to be hopeful in that world. There's a lot of good that Joe Biden has done in his first term. He has been an incredibly effective president, far more than a lot of people thought possible. That's a really good and powerful thing.
More than I thought possible.
More than I thought possible, too.
He surpassed my expectations. Look, I personally, I very much dislike his Gaza policy. Beyond that, I think he has done everything within his power to push forward the policies and values that I believe in politics.
Do you hear from your audience differently? And what have those conversations been like?
It's an ongoing conversation.
I think.
Well, because you do a lot of live shows.
Yeah.
You do, you know, so, and you talked about doing focus groups. So I have wondered what it's like when you actually are smacked in the face with a different point of view on this.
Yeah,
feel like there's disqualifying elements to current policies out of this White House.
Yeah. When we had John talk to Bernie Sanders on the pod.
I listened to that. Yeah.
And I thought what Bernie said about this captured the way that I feel about it, too.
My own view has been, for months, not another nickel. The leverage we have. What is the leverage we have? The leverage we have is money, is military aid. So the idea that we're sending bombs, the idea that we're sending money to Netanyahu is, to me, reprehensible. So I say to that young person, your gut feeling is right. And I'd have Palestinian friends who are worried every day what's going to happen if their family members have not already been killed. It is horrible. But all that I ask is let's not make a horrible situation even worse. Trump will be worse on that issue, let alone every other issue. So it's a tough moment, but that is what I think.
Joe Biden sometimes pays a little bit for promising that we would turn the page on the pandemic, on the chaos of Trump. And ironically, because we're, I think, a country that was traumatized by the pandemic in a way we never processed, plus the fact that our news still feels overwhelmed, not just by Trump, but Trump-style politics.
Oh, for sure.
There's a way in which Joe Biden pays for saying, hey, I know you're unhappy living with dad. Mom's coming to pick you up at the Chuck E. Cheese and we're going to go get, you know, I know that fridge was empty and I know that he, like, you know, had you sleeping on the futon, but you're going to come home with mom and things are going to be better and things don't feel better. And I think he pays for that a little bit. But when it comes to people who wish they had a better choice or feel like they don't like the idea that we're governed by septuagenarians and octogenarians, I agree. I wish that we had more options. I wish that it didn't feel like we have 75-year-olds banning TikTok in Congress and doing things we don't agree with. But if we want to build that world, we have to organize. We have to do a lot of work. And Joe Biden is the person that right now stands between us and oblivion.
Old people can change.
Sometimes it happens.
Look at Joe Biden.
Look at Joe Biden. Come on. Joe Biden.
But this is real. This is like, there was a complaint that in the State of the Union that he was not saying the word abortion more. And I was like.
And then he wore that t-shirt that said abortion the other day.
The 81-year-old.
It's not a thing.
The 81-year-old Catholic president who has never been personally very pro-choice is like the first president to talk about codifying Roe v. Wade in like the first 5 minutes of his State of the Union. Like, that's progress. That's not enough, but like, that's progress. And you don't say that to be like, so everyone calm down, but you say that to be like, you know what? Change is possible.
Well, you guys, thank you so much for talking with me and hashing this out. And, you know, you're many years into this process, and it's been interesting to see kind of where you have landed and where it's going next. So thank you for coming in. The book. It's called Democracy or Else.
It is.
And oh, we should say all the profits from the book are going to Vote Save America and organizing in 2024. So please go to crooked.com/books if
it's
you can.
It's a useful guide.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah, we wrote this
the
thing.
Call to action.
And we're not going to do that. It all's going to a good cause, you know? So that's something.
Apparently. I mean, like I said, you guys are optimists. No,
we
I'm
are.
I'm letting
we are.
You go.
Despite ourselves.
We are optimists. Deal with it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Adi.
That's all for today's episode of The Assignment. The Assignment is a production of CNN Audio, and this show was produced by Dan Bloom. Matt Martinez is our senior producer, and the executive producer of CNN Audio is Steve Lickteig. We got support from Haley Thomas, Alex Manasseri, Robert Mathers, John Dianora, Lenny Steinhardt, Jameis Andrus, Nicole Pesaru, and Lisa Namorow. Thanks, as always, to Katie Hinman. I'm Audie Cornish. Thank you for listening.
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.